We'll hear our speaker, and we believe it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that we will be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too, I must have this thing. And to start the debate, we're going to have Bill Roop come up to introduce our speaker.
I'm Bill Roop. I'm an alcoholic. It's my pleasure to be able to introduce a very good friend of mine, my favorite. He's got a spiritual guideline. His name is Theodore? Isidore. I get confused. I knew he had a Jew as a higher power. I didn't know his name. Neil has got 29 years. Neil came down from New York. Neil drove me here tonight in the rain. He's a wonderful driver. Neil took me over for a Chinese. Neil paid. I give you Neil.
The last word, I'm Neil, I'm an alcoholic. The last words he said to me were, don't talk too much about prayer. And as I talk later, you're going to see why. And please don't let anybody take it personal. This is my way. I keep sober. And we're all entitled to do it our own way. And I think there's a lot of different journeys you can go on in this program. If you can't tell, I was born in the Bronx. I was an only child. My father couldn't show affection. Had no guidance, hardly any guidance from him at all. He instilled two things in me, though. He instilled new cars and new women. And right now I have one totally under control, but new cars are still a problem. And my mom was very loving. And she was so loving I had to keep her arm's length, or else, you know, she'd be all over me all the time. And she was so nice that if I was trapped in a cabin in the snow, after 2 days I had to kill her, because that's how nice she was. She would drive me. It was impossible for somebody to be that nice. And as she got older, she just kept getting smaller and smaller. And I said, I always told her, Ma, I think we're going to lose you. We're never going to die. Also, if your families were close there, in the same building, apartment house we lived in, my grandmother had an apartment on my mother's side. My mother's sister had an apartment, and she had a son who was like a brother to me, who was born with spinal bifida. And if anybody doesn't know what that is, you're dead from the waist down, you can't walk, there's no nerves, no feeling, and I was very, very close to him. And it affected a lot of my thinking in the later years. He lived till 16, and then we lost him. I write things down because I forget. Or else I'd speak for 2 minutes, and that would be it, and I said, why would I say that? Very young, I tried hard, real hard in sports. And every time I got to be the best in my level, I want to go with the bigger guys, to play with the bigger guys. And it became that way in anything all my life. I always wanted to be with the big guys. And when I got there, I wanted to be with the bigger guys. I always felt that there was somebody watching me. Like if I was in a group, I could be in a group of people that I knew very well. And there was always somebody watching me, and it was me. Because I really didn't have that much confidence. My grandfather used to call me Schlooms, and in Italian that means piece of shit. He said, hey, Schlooms, all the time. I had good basic intelligence, but I really never tried to compete in school. I was always attracted to the tough guys, and I wanted to be like them. I walked straight up and down in those days, but the tough guys walked this way, so I taught myself how to pull a posture so I could be like the tough guys. Why did that? Who don't know? Probably part of my alcoholism, even then, stupidity. When it was time to go to high school, I was forced to go to Catholic high school. It should have been good to me, but it had the opposite effect. I managed to get by without trying, but at the same time, I was a member of a street club, or if you want to call it a gang, and the Bronx was a tough place, still is, and we never took an insult. We had hit first and asked questions later. Even now, I have a tough time with insults, even after all this time sober. And whether the insults are imagined or not, you know, I'm always lashing out. Today, I avoid fights, and then 10 minutes later, I say, what happened to you? You got old, you got chicken, you know. I can't seem to win. And then in my neighborhood also, there were the jocks. There were the guys that liked girls, there were the guys that liked to gamble, and there was the guys that liked to eat. And naturally, I was in every group. You know. Most guys were just in one section, but I had to be in every group. And through all this, I was really kept in check because my father was pretty tough. I had curfews, I had no car, like my friends had cars at that time. They used to take me away for the summer up to the mountains. Naturally, I hated that. I wanted to hang around on the corner with my friends. And so I was kept in pretty good check. And in my senior year, my father and mother finally got divorced. And all of a sudden, I got hit with all this freedom. You know, college was coming up. I had to go to Catholic college. And for a weekly report cards, I went to a school where I could cut classes. One day I had no school at all. So I broke a record there. I lasted about 2 months in that one. Then I went to Brooklyn Community College for 1 week, left that one. After I got married, I went to City College for about 3 months, left that one. So I went to three schools, never got one credit. I'm pretty proud of that. My friends were getting married about this time, and so I said, well, it's about time for me to get married, too. And there I really got lucky. 51 years ago, I married someone that's really stuck by me through a lot of, no fit, a lot of things, stuck by me for a lot of years. Three children and eight grandchildren and... But finally, she ended up getting plus media, after I got sober. What happened was, then my dad was a butcher, so I wanted to be a butcher too. I couldn't go to work with him. He wouldn't teach me because there was too many women hanging around all the time, and he didn't want me to cramp his style. Not that I knew it then. He said, go to work with your uncle. He's left-handed. He'll teach you the left-handed way. So then I got wise later on. I saw your father with this one, I saw your father with that one. Naturally, I looked up to that. In Italian, you know, you grew up in that type of atmosphere. Mistresses were just common. You know. It was people that had straight marriages and had each other. That was very strange. You know, Italian men had to do what they wanted to do and take advantage of their wives. And it was all okay. You know, in those days, the women, the Italian women, I don't know what happened, but they stood for it. You know? Try it today. Then I went to work for the sanitation. And all this time, you know, in my teens and my 20s, alcohol. There was no problem with alcohol at all. I was an alcoholic. I didn't know I was an alcoholic, but as far as the alcohol was concerned, it wasn't there. And so I started to work for the Department of Sanitation in New York City, which was a big job. It was a good job in those days. And worked with them 10 years. And I studied for 2 days, and I wrote 100 out of 10,000 guys, and I got promoted to foreman. And at that time, I lost 30 pounds, and we moved up to the country. And one night I was in a bar there, and the bartender didn't show up. And I said, you know, Jimmy, I'd like to try this once in a while. And he said, oh, really? He said, he gave me a shirt and put me to work. And I found booze, and I lost the 30 pounds. It seems woman found me, and all of a sudden I was in paradise. I said, where has this been all my life? What am I doing home with three kids and a wife and going home every night? And That's when I started to drink. And after 11 years on the job, one day I got drunk and I quit. And I just knew so many people. I could have bought a pension in those years for $1,000. I could have bought a pension for life. But you know how we drunks are. You just go do what you got to do at times. So now I became a bartender. I thought that was the end all. You know, you're behind a bar. Everybody's attention is on you, and you start to learn doing little tricks here and tricks there. And you know, I never had confidence before. And again, all the women and there's the booze making me feel easier. So instead of this neighborhood place, now I wanted to be a bartender in a big city, you know, in Copacabana or something like that. And naturally, I went down county to Westchester County, where there were, this was the late 60s, and you know, in those days, everything was, you know, the power child, the flower children, and sex was rampant, and there were discos everywhere, and I ended up working in the best disco, naturally, in that area, and it became a great thing. It was like going to party every night. And it was about 50 miles from my home. And if I did go home sometimes, I had to go this way because I didn't see two lines, I saw three lines. And there were accidents upon accidents. I just didn't know how I didn't get killed. I may have killed somebody, but who knows. Then I decided to take a geographical. I'd be a better guy if I moved to Florida. So we sold the house. In May of fact, New York, packed up my wife and three kids and moved to Florida, and I became a worse drunk there than I was in New York. One real bad thing happened. I missed somebody, and I got on a plane to come up to see her, and came back, and my wife picked me up at the airport, and when we got home, my middle son fell off the low roof and broke two wrists, and then he had a long trouble with that. And that was my fault for not being there, or for being where I wasn't supposed to be. And that's still another thing bothers me today. And this went on for years. Jobs, no jobs. I had a steady girlfriend, and there wasn't enough, and there were others. Until finally, when I finally did stop drinking, I realized that I wasn't monogamous. All I had to do was not hurt my wife. And I lived for many years like that, even after I was sober. Then I started going to psychiatrists before that. There's something wrong. I don't know what it was. So the third guy, I went in and he said, "Well, I know your problem." And he said, "Well," the other guys were quiet. And I was afraid they were going to reach for the phone and call the guys with the net, you know. And he said, "You're an alcoholic." "Oh." I said, "Charlie Barrett's an alcoholic." And that was a guy in my neighborhood that used to bum by the subway, used to bum change, and he'd be all red and beat up and sleep in the park and all that kind of stuff. That's all I knew about an alcoholic. So he tried to explain it to me, and then he said, "I want to take you to a meeting tonight," because he happened to be an alcoholic too. So he dragged me to a meeting, and it was a beginner's meeting, and it was a real low bottom guy. And there was no identification. There was nothing. I couldn't understand what was going on. And after the meeting, all I wanted to do was go and have a drink and discuss what I saw and what I heard. So, naturally, I left that doctor right away. And I beat myself up for six more years. And finally, I think I was on a two-day drunk. And I was a mess. I had gotten in two or three fights. We all know we're drunk, we can't fight too good. You know, I got scars on my head to show for it. And a real good friend of mine's father-in-law was in AA. He said, "Let my father-in-law come speak to you." And I was desperate. I was, you know, he got me just right. You know, we talk about desperation. I hate to use the word gift, but I'll use it for this. The gift of desperation, I had it. I was desperate. And he came with another guy that night, the father-in-law. And the other guy was an ex-New York City cop who was a bag man for the precinct. He used to take all the money and split it out with the men, you know, all the payola. And Mike Gallagher, he's long gone now. He was a great guy, too. He was almost as irreverent as I am. But he taught me, I think, that it was okay to be irreverent. And that was the first meeting. And I don't count the other one. That was the first meeting I went to, and it's almost 29 years later now. We didn't give out chips in New York, but I'm still sober on that first meeting. And when I came in that door, I had that first step for me. And it became pretty easy for me, the drinking part, because I had that first step. And the first 2.5 years, I was still behind the bar. You know, at that time, I was making a couple of grand a week in 1982, clear money, and I had kids in college, and I had nowhere to go. And it was too late to go to school for brain surgeon or anything like that. So I had to stay, but it just proves how strong the program is. So if you're new, so at that meeting, when I came out, there was a guy stayed outside. He said, "What do you do for a living?" He goes, "I sold a bartender." Then he stopped this. "Well, you can't do that, you know." And that's a bad thing to do to me, you know. Because you start doing that, I'm going to bite the finger off, even if I'm desperate. And I really didn't know what to say. You know? What am I going to do? How am I going to quit this job? My kids got to eat. They got to go to school. And I was so fortunate that another fella stayed by his car and fiddled around. And he did this and did that. I never even noticed he was still there. And when the other guy stopped giving me the finger, and he left, he came over, he said, "Listen," he said, "Bob's a nice guy." He said, "I don't know what he was telling you, but for the first year, we recommend no severe changes in your life. Just take it easy before you do anything." And then I think he spoke the next day, and he told a story. He was babysitting, and he set the chair on fire that he was in with a cigarette. He got up and he threw the chair out the window. I said, "This guy's got to be my sponsor. I like this guy, man." And his name was Pat O'Brien, and he was my sponsor for about 23 years, and I lost him to cancer. In the last maybe 15 years, we shared each other as sponsors. After 2.5 years are over, all of a sudden I got a chance to go into business with my old friends from the city. They had never seen me as a full-blown drunk. They just remembered me from the neighborhood. And now they can't understand. What is this guy, an alcoholic? Where's his willpower? What do you mean you go to meetings? You mean you can't have a glass of wine with dinner? And try to explain to an Italian tough guy from New York, that's not willpower. Impossible. It's totally, totally impossible. And we used to go out to dinner. You can't have a drink of wine. Then they got to respect them a little, you know. No glass for him. He don't get any. And they start trying to take care of me. And then, you know, at the beginning, I would have got mad at that. But then I got to like it. And to this day, they still don't understand it. But they respect it. They respect it. And before that, though, when I was still drinking and driving and going job to job and my wife going on welfare, I mean, it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad, but I didn't care about anything. You know, the booze was there every night when I went to work. The money was green. It was like a party, man. Everything was wonderful. Then it really hit me. This is getting like a job now. This is like going to work. And I ran a string of bad luck every time I went into a place to work. For one reason or another, place called. So not through my fault, but so I was out of work more than I was working until I got this last real good paying job. So then when I came into the program and I got him as a sponsor, I asked an old guy there, and I asked around, "How's this really work?" And they said, "Go and ask Tom." And I went to ask old Tom, and I said, "Tom, good morning. They told me to ask you, how does this thing really work?" He said, "Me boy, don't drink and go to meetings." And now, like I say, it's 29 years later, guess what? I don't drink and I go to meetings. 2 years in the program, I went through a real tough time. I couldn't understand higher power, and I really tried. I went back to church. Sit in the church one day, stand up, sit down, the hell am I doing here? I said, this is not for me. I don't get this. And things got easier from that day. When I didn't really try to find. And every time I try to find something, it just doesn't work. But I know there's something there. That's as far as I could get. I even picked Roop as a sponsor. I mean, how could you have two people more opposite? I mean, he believes in everything. He believes in love, and that other guy loves this guy and hates nobody. Me, I don't even like half the people in AA, never mind love. So after this meeting, when I was in about 2 years, I got in the car and I stopped beating up the steering wheel. I mean, why can't I get it? Why can't I get it? I'm hitting the wheel. I don't get it. The words came in, you don't have to get it. Oh, what thought that was? Then I talked to my sponsor a little more. I said, as long as you believe in something other than you is keeping you sober. And that's the way I believe today. And again, this is my way I handle the problem. I believe there's a higher power. I have no clue what this higher power's will is. I mean, who am I to know what this person's will is? You know, people say, I'm not humble because I don't know. Everybody knows. Everybody else knows everything. I'm telling you, I don't know, and they're telling me I'm not humble. Something's wrong. You know? Something's radically wrong. You know? I can't believe that the higher power could create people so they can kneel down. It don't make sense to me. Why would a higher power do that? Why would a higher power create hell? No, you didn't. He didn't create hell. You did. But I thought he created everything. Well, there's no answer. You know, it just goes back and forth. But I do believe there's something after, and I do believe we're here for some kind of reason. I can't abide by the word gift. People tell me you got a gift to be an A, and I say, who gave me the gift of alcoholism? If I see Jackie Gleason, he's hamina. And sometimes I'm at meetings and I want to run away. I just want to run away, but I stay because I'm afraid not to go to meetings because I know meetings keep me sober. And I know I'm going to go to meetings for the rest of my life, and as long as I go to meetings for the rest of my life, I'm never going to drink again. So for me to say, and again, my way of thinking, for me to say I do it 24 hours at a time is totally bullshit because I intend never to drink again, but I know I have to go to meetings all the time. So which is basically, I guess, the same thing, just a play on words. Because, like when I first came into the program, I used to say, I go to AA to fight my disease. Because Bronx Italian guys, we never quit on shit. So I had to say I came to fight. And then I finally realized that, what am I fighting? And I can't drink. You know, I wake up today, I don't have a choice whether to drink or not. There's no choice. It just doesn't exist. You know, like I always say, do I wake up in the morning and say, well, should I jump off this 10-story building or put my head in the lion's mouth? No, alcohol is just not there. It's not part of my life. And it's a blessing from where, I don't know, for me to be there. And, like I say, if you're new and you're having high power trouble, give it time. Either it'll come or it won't come, but you don't have to have it. As long as you have AA, which is the higher power. When I came in, the first step was good. The second step had power with a small P in my head. And now it's kind of, that P got a little bigger, but it's nowhere near a capital here. And I'm going to keep coming. You know, people won't like to hear what I got to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Neil. You want to pass the chips now? Okay. I mean, pass the baskets. Seventh tradition states that there are no dues or fees for a membership, but we're flat broke. So if y'all have anything in your pocket that you can spare, we really appreciate it. It keeps speakers like Neil coming, and right now we got almost 100 speakers on the internet. Bill was one of the first. So there's always something to listen to or to do before taking that drink. And then Frank's going to come up and hand out the chips. I'm Frank Waters, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And here, like no other place in Atlanta, we have a chip system. It's because they're the blue chip speaker meeting chips. Have a white chip. There's a lot of little colorful things for all these chips. They taught me when I was 6 years old in kindergarten that, you know, this was red and this was yellow. And I'm thinking that really that's why they call them the red and yellow and green and blue chips and the white chip. But I've been told by some people that they have different meanings. But here we give a white chip if you want to try this one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, or if you're coming back from, you know, adding to your story. So does anybody here tonight want to pick up a white chip and try it one more time, or for the first time? You don't have to come hug me. You can hug Tim if you need to. Okay. Does anybody here tonight have 30 days for an aluminum chip? Anybody else? I lied about the hugging thing. Anybody here have 90 days for a red chip and knife? Yeah. Anybody have 6 months for a yellow chip? Feel the love. Anybody here have nine months for a green chip? Anybody have a birthday, a year or multiple of years? Now, I'm going to leave this white chip up here so you can steal it after the meeting. But any of these other chips, I'm going to hug you if you grab one. So give yourself a hand on the chip you hold.
Thank you, Frank. Okay. Well, who's going to go home and take a drink tonight? All right, well, thank you, Neil. You might get us through another day without a drink. We do have a few minutes. If anybody has anything on their chest that they need to discuss with the group, you're welcome to have 3 minutes. Anybody care to say anything? Yes.
Hey, I believe in God, but I just really want to tell him that I appreciate it. Whether there is a God or not, and that they can stay sober, certainly, unless they believe in my concept, grateful. For AA, making the doors wide enough, all of us, who go, you know, don't apologize for what you believe, I guess, as well.
Anybody else? Yes.
My name is Nick. I really enjoyed that. Don't make bomb blade grass and destroy that. I sponsored someone who was struggling with the heart because he was a Buddhist and he soon got he died out for it. Now we sponsor one another. And he's an atheist. I like to be, you know, we see him and I can see this box garden there, the Bible. What are you doing with that Bible up there? The eye, the bird, great Britain. He said, I've got a big Bible, he said.
Once he's like that, he's a Mormon when they come to the door. Thank you very much. Anybody? Okay. We have time for some AA related announcements. What we got? Oh, yes.
Southern Alcoholics.
Hey, brother.
Saturday night, 8 o'clock. Buckhead Covenant Presbyterian Church holds the step-by-step group. We thank you for your support. I have flyers and more information if you want it. Saturday night, 8 o'clock, and there will be cookies. And coffee.
Who's got a key? Anybody got a key to the literature room? Okay. See Tom or Tim. And we don't have a whole lot to clean up tonight, but if we could have a few volunteers go off our point.
Yeah, the Latin Man's Workshop has still got openings, so if anybody interested in going to the workshop, it's March 25th and 27th. Just go online to Latin Man's Workshop and be able to place in there, you know, bring up a registration form and fill one out and get your money in, or see somebody on the scholarship committee and get a scholarship. They're about 3/4 full, so there's still some places. Squeeze in, but you know, that happens 2 days ago, so.
Now, that's a great weekend, and there's a lot of good weekends in AA fellowship, but if you're a man and you haven't experienced it, I definitely recommend it also. And Frank is there every session for quite a while, so at least you'll know one person if you decide to go, and hopefully I'll be there this year. Next week, we've got Lyle P. telling his story. Lyle is a member of the Stockbridge Group. He's going to be picking up a 21-year chip, and you probably may have heard of him. I don't know if you've read his story or not, but it's page 522 in the fourth edition big book. I don't want to spoil the ending if you're thinking about coming, but we're really looking forward to having him here again. He spoke last year on the Zone meeting, I think. And he's coming back to tell a story and pick up a 21-year chip. But it's a phenomenal story. As Northwest Airline pilot, he and his entire crew got away with 200 passengers, a little bit tipsy, and he ended up on CNN, CBS, and Johnny Carson for the next 2 years and did a little time in jail, but worked his way back, and it's an incredible story. At least the people who published the Alcoholics Anonymous book think so. And then the following week, refresh my memory, from Skyland Group, Von K. And we're really looking forward to having Vaughn. And there's a traveling group on Monday nights with Skyland, and so we expect a bunch of Skylanders here that night, and that'll be on the 14th. So, let's see, Mr. Paul here is going to be the foreman if anybody wants to help clean up. It's not a whole lot to do tonight, I don't think. And anything else, Tim? Okay, cut it. All right. I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Every reminder to place principles for personalities, and for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
About what happened tonight.
On earth as it is in heaven, give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen. Amen. Amen. Amen. Amen.